Who's here whom I have never met before? Well, lots of you, lovely. Looking forward to connecting a bit more. Who's here for the first time at Goward House? Several of you, all right. So does that mean that you who put your hands up just then also are new to intensive meditation? Who is new to meditation intensively? Oh, everyone's done some meditation. Okay. Has anybody not been quiet for a whole day? Okay. Okay. Just a sort of sense of where you're coming from. Thank you. Where to begin? So, yes, I did. First, before I do that, just a little logistics. We will spend the day, as from now, we will spend the day silently. What happens with that silence is it isn't just being silent, not talking to each other. It's not relating to each other so much. It's spending the day where we're in self-reflection. It's watching and observing our inner experience, where we're, as soon as we're with people, we come out of that experience and we're so engaged in, you know, the relationship and what people are saying and what we're saying to them. And so this allows us, it's not just to not say anything, it's refocusing the attention, redirecting our attention to our inner experience. And so it's so supported in the silence and so distracted in the connection. So that's why we do that. It's not being aware of each other, it's being careful and kind, but not involving or engaging, and that's the reason for that. So, not to feel awkward or weird about it, but just really take the luxury of 2 days to just get in touch with what's really going on with yourself. So that's the idea of it. Such a rare thing, especially, you know, when you're engaged, if you're in working mode, if you're in the city, zooming around, it's rare. So enjoy that. What I will do is, at the beginning of the day, now I'm going to explain what we're going to be practicing for the weekend and talk about that, more of a Dharma talk to explain and hopefully inspire you to practice. And after lunch, I'll give a little more of that and some guided practice together. And the rest of the time, you're going to be practicing in your own way what I've been suggesting, quietly, silently, doing your own meditation, sitting here and then walking meditation in and out, as many of you have done before. Periods of walking and sitting. We'll take an hour at lunchtime, and we end today at 4:30, and we'll repeat the same thing tomorrow. Again, I'll talk in the morning first thing to kind of get us going, and a little bit of guidance after lunch, and yet tomorrow we close at 4 o'clock at the end of the day. And in some of the periods when the majority of you are going to be walking, the sun is now shining, so hopefully we'll have good weather, I will happily make myself available to meet with a number of you, say 10, in this room here. That's just, Sheila's pointing at it right there. It's to the right of the staircase. It says theater. It won't be a theater. It'll just be a meeting room. So, but in order to have some conversation or some questions you can ask in a small, intimate situation. If anybody has anything really up for you in your life right now and you want to have a conversation with me personally, let me know of that, and I'll see if I can set aside time for that also. And I will have a couple of times during the day, I'll start after lunch like this, where in this big group here like this, I'll make myself available. We'll do some questions about what you've been encountering in your meditation and sort of general questions like that, Q&A period. Just so that's how we'll structure the weekend. I'm hoping people think of this as a weekend rather than a day, because when I'd set these up, I kind of try and set us up to develop through the weekend of what we're going to be doing, followed by what we're going to be doing. So I encourage that as best as possible. I know it's not possible for everybody. Do you have any questions? Okay. Are you comfortable? Do you have what you need sitting there? If you need to move from sitting to coming down, you'll need to have brought things with you to sit on the floor. Are there any extra cushions or anything like that available? No. So you're on your own for comfort. Okay, I'll leave it at that. So, being fully human, the subtitle of the weekend retreat advertised, it says, can we live with greater reverence, wonder, freedom? Can we contribute the best of ourselves to our world, our people, ourselves? Practicing present awareness supports this journey of our one precious life. So I guess I'm wanting to talk today about reverence for life, richness of life, quality of life, quality of living, which is really why we go to any form of spiritual endeavor, any, you know, form of practice, whatever it may be. It's we want something a little more than the day-to-day, mundane, superficial, shopping, working, arguing kind of world, busy, scuffling around kind of world. It's depth, isn't it, we want to be in touch with. So it's a fairly general heading. So I'd like to ask you a sort of a question, reflection. We all have many moments in our lives where we feel really full. We feel those rich, deep, meaningful moments. Sometimes they're called aha moments, or I sometimes call them sunset moments. But you know what I mean, the moments when you're really there for that moment. Awe, perhaps, or wonder. So just take a moment and remember one, preferably a recent one, where you were, what it was that was happening. And don't just picture it. Stay with that for a moment and see if you can get in touch with some of what happens inside you in those moments. What's it like? What is there there, and what is there not there going on? Inside you. Thank you. And so would any of you just say one word about what is there in such a moment, or what is not there in such a moment in your experience?
Aliveness.
Joy.
Gratitude.
Weightlessness. Weightlessness, i.e. light.
Attunement.
Faith.
Space.
Lightness, gratitude, attunement, aliveness. Somebody over there? Something?
Ease.
I didn't hear that one.
Receptivity.
True, isn't it? All these things? They're not just that one person's experience. They resonate with all of us, right? So I want to talk a bit more about this, because we all know what this is like. We all have these moments many times. We love these moments, don't we? We revere them. They're reverence. Why don't we live like that all the time? What's going on? What happens when that's there, and what clutters it up? So that's what I want to talk about, and why meditating is relevant here. So it's one of the, I mean, all, I agree with all of you, all those things. I have lots of other things too to add. When we're really in one of those moments where we're fully alive, fully attuning with, I like that word attuning, it's like harmony is now happening, there's resonating, the sound is now with the other, whatever it is. As we're connecting with something. One of the things that's going on is that we're really giving full attention to it. Say it's a moment, for me often it's about the moon. I have a whole love affair with the moon. So when, you know, especially when it's a specially new one, low in the sky, or the full moon is setting and I've woken up early and it's over there, or something. Whatever it is, whatever the moments were for all of us, being with a special person, you know, you're completely attending to that. There's a fullness of attention. Is that right? You're not sort of half seeing it and half doing 10 things at the same time. You're complete. It takes you your attention completely. So that wholeheartedness, that whole attention, 100%, is part of the It's a very important thing that's part of that experience. When we, I like the word giving attention. For some reason, I don't like the word paying attention. It feels too obliged. But you actually give full attention to something for a little moment. I like the word wholehearted. You give your attention, but somehow when you really give your attention fully to something, whatever the situation, your heart gets engaged in it. That's why there's that sense of lightness or joy, or it isn't just your eyes looking and then your mind being there for it. It's somehow then it evokes some kind of caring. It's beautiful, right? It's interesting how that happens. But if we don't give full attention to something, we kind of glance off something, there isn't the time to actually connect with it and care about it. So that's a thing to parent. What also is there isn't just fullness of our attention. It stays for a few moments. There's a slowing down. Is that not true? We don't just bounce off, oh, that was groovy moon, off we go to the... It's like, oh, it sort of pulls our rush to a stop. Is that not right? We're so speedy, jumpy, 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 and it all just like... So there's a fullness of attention, but there's a staying power in that, some kind of hesitation. We don't want to do anything else. In fact, we find we'd rather stay there with that. That is nicer than whatever the next thing was going to be, or doing something different. It becomes somehow more beautiful or meaningful. Now there's an interesting thing that's going on. It's not that the moon is particularly beautiful, actually. It's that we see it as beautiful because we're really seeing it. So it's not so much the object, it's how we're relating to it. And that's one of the messages of meditation. It's not about what's happening in your life. It's the way you meet it. So this holding our attention with whatever it is that we're giving our attention to, holding it there and finding then that there's this sense of whatever it is, beauty, joy, love, perhaps, certainly care. And this steadiness, the slowing down of the jumpiness that gets to be a kind of settledness. When that grows, and at times we can really have more of that being able to, the rush sort of pulls down and halts for a few moments, pause for a few moments. That state becomes a sort of resting. Somebody said that. It's sort of restful. The other, in comparison, is rather agitated. Is that not true? One of the reasons why we like those moments is because they're like, we can relax there. Somebody said that. And the other is not so relaxing. I've got to go and do this and that, and I'm busy. It's like, oh, we're held somehow there. We can settle into it. That ability to be more settled, to be more collected, is relaxing, is resting. And there's something about that that's, I don't know what the words are, but something about reliable for some reason. You can trust those moments. Whereas the jumpy, speedy, got to do things, then there isn't the quality of the divine or awe that you can actually trust. Am I making sense? Another thing that nobody mentioned that goes on in those moments, for all of us, I know, but describe them differently, is that not just the jumpiness goes away and there's a pause, which is true, but if we go quiet inside, right? They're like, oh, look at the moon. Just goes, oh, look at that. And all that chattering stops. The pause isn't just from attention moving to other things. It's the filling up the space with all of the la 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 la. And then it's like, oh, wow. It goes quiet, doesn't it? We don't have to make a comment about that. We don't say, look at the awesome orange glowing moon 3 inches above the horizon. We just go, oh. Aha is a quieting of the commentary. The sort of ceaseless chattering, it ceases. Part of the resting and the relief is the quiet that happens. It's like the busy part of the mind, I think of it as the left hemisphere that's explaining all the time, just relaxes. And now we can just be with this thing, whatever it is, this person's gaze or the starry sky, whatever. It's often nature that does it. There's words like awestruck, dumbstruck. We're struck by something, and what happens is shh, right? All this has to do with meditation, because what we're doing in meditation is we're cultivating those states where we're not so busy, we're not so commenting, we're not jumping onto the next thing. We're learning to give more and more attention and stay with doing that process, right? It's just the same. We're cultivating these states. When we're in one of those moments and we're resting and it's quiet and it's somehow bigger than us, in the quieting inside, another thing that's happening, well, actually that's not happening, is we're not doing anything with it. We're not commenting on it. We don't feel like something has to be done. It is enough. It is, or means like, wow, there's this bigger thing than my usual experience. And in my usual experience, I'm doing something with it, to it, for it, about it, chasing it, worrying about it, planning it. I'm busy. There's a me doing something. But in those moments, my consciousness is sort of fuller with whatever the thing is, the scenario, whatever, the situation. Because I'm fuller of that in my consciousness, there isn't so much room for the little doer to do things. Am I making sense? So what is absent is the sense of me, is the I like that, goes quiet. We might be liking it, but we're not thinking in terms of I like it. We're not thinking in terms of me. The separate sense of self goes quiet, is no longer functioning in there, because we're full of awe for whatever. Is that true? And that sense of me doing something and being busy and is actually stressful. And when we talk about freedom, when the Buddha is talking about freedom, liberation, it's freedom from that habit of always feeling that we've got to be doing, we're busy getting, chasing, worrying, planning, at the very least commenting, you know, often critically judging, comparing, that experience, that state of being self-concerned and busy with all our responsibilities is the struggle. And then those bigger moments of awe or the spirit or the sense of connection or attunement or any of those words, lightness, is when that selfing abates for some moments. But we dearly love ourselves, and we're so full of our needs and our business, our life, our people, our plans. We take it all so seriously. We get so preoccupied with perpetuating this self and taking care of this self and this self's life. But what we're doing is actually cluttering up ourselves with all of this self-concern. And then we have a simple moment. It's often not even awesome, but we're just with a good friend and we don't have to be defending ourselves, explaining ourselves, representing ourselves, imposing ourselves, explaining ourselves. We can just be with a good friend. And it's easy and it's pleasant. And why we like hanging out with our good friends is because we don't have to be somebody or do anything. It's just as a natural sharing. It's much more of a relief. It's much closer to freedom than all of the self-centered behavior that we spend so much time feeling we have to do. One other person said, somebody said, I don't remember who it was, in when I asked you to describe some of what the qualities of those kind of moments, I think you said something like available, receptive. It was whoever, somebody over here was talking about being receptive. So this is another piece. It's very subtle. But in the moments of quietude, of connection, of attunement, of awe, of fully being there, fully attending to, there is a sense of availability. There's a sense, you said, Jeremy, spaciousness. It's like we become more open. Our attention becomes wider. Is that not true? Is that a way of describing it? And when and because we're quiet and the me isn't busy there making comments about it, there is room for whatever the thing to impress itself on us, to fill us. We feel fuller. There's a little story. It's a little one of those little Zen examples of a Western man goes to Japan to visit a Zen monastery, and has studied a lot of Zen and Buddhism and has a lot of knowledge, quote unquote knowledge, and goes and meets the Roshi in the temple and wants to explain. Just that he's really quite an adept and he knows quite a lot, and so he's busy explaining all of the things that he knows, just to kind of like represent himself to this stranger, you know. And as he's doing so, the Roshi is pouring tea, two cups of tea, and so he's pouring the tea from a teapot, and while the man is talking, the Roshi is pouring. And the man goes on talking, and the Roshi goes on pouring. And the cup is full and full until it's totally full, until it's totally overflowing. It's pouring all over the table, all over the floor, and eventually person realizes something's weird going. He sort of stops talking, and so the Roshi stops pouring. And the Roshi says, you know, it's like, your mind is like that cup. It's like so full up. How is it going to be able to receive anything more? Why did you come here? And that's what we're like. We're full up. But in those moments, we're not full up. That stuff that's all of filling us up subsides, and we now have a sense of spaciousness, and we're open for life. And when that happens, that experience, some of you were saying, it's delightful, it's beautiful, it's full, but it's actually much more empty than those other moments which were all cluttering up. One of the words for vipassana, one of the translations for vipassana, is clear seeing. So think of the word clear and clarity. The opposite, you know, the opposite of clear is when it's unclear. I think of a window, for instance, or a light. It's covered, you know, it's got layers of junk. So we're uncluttering, we're cleaning, we're clearing our inner reality, so that we can have more of these moments that we all appreciate. And how can you unclutter clutter except by seeing the clutter? You can't just step around the clutter and it's gone, because it's so automatically there. We so readily clutter up our every experience by chattering, by commenting, by wanting, by worrying, by planning, by just having some agenda on something. We add our stuff into the space of our lives. We add it out of self-concern, out of need, out of fear, out of whatever it is, desperation sometimes, you know, out of nervousness sometimes, chattering away. Let's translate this into when you meet somebody and you have a meeting with somebody. There you are, you meet with somebody, and you say something to them, and they are not fully there. They're half there, and they go, yeah, 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 but you know that they're thinking of something else. And what's that like? It's not so great. You kind of don't like that. You resent them even for being like, excuse me. Or you do more to try and get more attention. I have a granddaughter. She just was staying with me last night and yesterday and the night before. She's 4 and a half. And I just watch her like, I want your attention. You know, she's 4 and a half, so she's completely guileless in the way she does it. But she's like, no, me, here, now. You know, well, we're all like that, actually. We're just a little more sophisticated, but. And when somebody, on the other hand, and we meet somebody and they actually look right at us and they're quiet and they have that steady look and they're not off to the next thing and they're not saying, oh yes, I know all about that, and they then fill it up with themselves, but they have space for you. How does that, doesn't that feel lovely? It's like you actually feel met, held, cared for, valued. We know what it's like on the receiving end, but we're so, when we're busy doing our stuff, we're not actually often attuned to what it's like for the other person when we're, oh yes, I know all about that. Or we're telling them our story, and we're not really attuned to whether their eyes are rolling up or... The quality of our life is about this careful attention, actually giving more attention to what's happening, rather than full of our thoughts, stories, worries, stuff. So here's another little story, a situation that I had, a uncomfortable, difficult, challenging, irritating interaction. And it made me PO'd. And I was really PO'd with this person who was busy doing whatever he was doing and didn't actually see or hear what I was having to say. And I had something to say, and I had an opinion, and I thought it was an important opinion, and I had all kinds of reasons why it was an important opinion, and but it didn't make the slightest difference. I was like, no. I was sort of shut down, and that's why I was PO'd. And it stayed with me, this situation, for quite a long time, and I had this irritated, critical relationship with this person inside me. Didn't have much to do with them, but... And then some years went by, and then it came back up. Something happened that reminded me of that situation. It came back up in my mind, but I was in a retreat, and I was in silence, and I was in walking meditation period. And so this irritation came back up again with this person. So I'm a meditator, so I'm like, okay, let me feel what's going on. I'm pissed off. Okay, so I felt that, allow myself to feel that anger and judgment and critical. And I said, let me just stay with what that feels like. And as I stayed, because I know how to stay, let the feeling be here, put my attention into my body and feel that feeling. As I stayed with it, of course, this is true for all of us, underneath there, as well as that feeling of judgment and criticism and negativity, was a feeling of hurt. And I'm like, oh, and it was just an unpleasant feeling, and I was like, I was really hurt. And I realized I was so hurt that this, now he is not a particularly important person to me, I don't know why, but nevertheless, it was a hurtful thing that I was dismissed in my, what I was wanting to say. So then I let myself feel hurt and stay with that for quite some time, quite a few minutes. I was feeling hurt. And I began to feel like I was 3 years old. And it was a little person and wasn't seen and wasn't noticed. Somebody had opinions about me or told stories about me. They didn't actually really get me. And I was like, that's what it's like. It's just... It stays with you, not to actually be given that kind of attention. I wasn't given that kind of attention. And that's painful. And then came into my mind, this thing was like, he didn't see you. Because that's what it was, that's why it was hurting, he didn't see me. And then the next thought that came into my mind, and I didn't mean to think these things, I just was staying with this, was he couldn't see you. He was full of his stuff. And the situation was a situation that actually caused a reaction in him. And he got, his behavior was because of his reaction to the situation. And he was busily in his world and his whatever it was, and I wasn't seen. It wasn't that he was being mean to me. It's that he completely couldn't even, that wasn't even part of his consciousness, because he was in whatever was going on inside him. And once I realized, of course, he couldn't see me. It wasn't about me. It was his whatever was going on for him. And then I, of course, from that, understood. And I know this in my brain. We all know this. But I actually was experiencing. When we're caught up in our stuff, our story, our worries, our woundedness, our expectations, whatever it is, we don't see. And then we do and act and say things out of that place that actually hurt each other. We bump into each other. It's our stuff that does the bumping. It's not the person. It wasn't about him and it wasn't about me. It was his upset caused, in my case, pain. But basically, I was collateral damage. And then, of course, we all realize that that's why we all hurt each other. and why we get hurt. It's not because we're going around hurting each other deliberately at all. It's that our stuff doesn't see. And so we bump into and tread on and roll over sometimes other people. Use them or abuse them even. It was very clear. And once I would let myself go through that little process by staying with the feeling of unpleasantness in me, there was nothing else. It's gone from my consciousness because I'm not PO'd anymore, because I'm not hurt anymore, because it's like it's completely understandable. It's what we do, what we all do. So it's not that I love this person where I didn't before, but there isn't anything between us anymore. This is how the healing can happen in any situation, not just for meditators, but the ability to meditate means to stay with and be with and open to, without having to tell a story and without having to fix it, without having to blame the guy and phone him up and ream him out, and nothing to be done, but just stay with and feel. And then things make sense. And then the disturbance can subside. That's my experience. I wrote down here at the bottom of my notes, talking about when you're in a new situation or a new relationship or a new activity or something. It's when it's new, it's fresh and it's interesting and it takes our attention. It's easier to give attention when we're with something new. And when it's the same old, we can kind of like, can we keep looking with those eyes that are the wonder, eyes of wonder? And I wrote down here at the bottom of the page, familiarity breeds contempt. It isn't that it's actually that we get negative necessarily, it's that we lose that reverence because we lose that freshness of looking. And when you're newly in love, for instance, I have this little granddaughter who was with me in the last couple of days, but I also have a brand new 3 weeks old grandson, another child. And the wonder of the newness of this little, and who is this little person, and look at this, and discovery. It's so easy to give our attention in it when it's new like that and fresh. And many of you know I was a midwife for a long time and have been around many new mothers and their babies, and they're absorbing all this new information and gazing for hours and hours because it's fascinating. And we don't gaze for hours and hours with something that we think we're not going to find any more about because we know it all now. Can we keep that's what we call beginner's mind, that sort of fresh, open? What's going on right now here? What's possible? But we fill up that space with, oh, I know all about it. Yeah, it's boring. Been there, done that. And we're actually filling it up with our what we think of as certainty. And we're not being that innocent, open, wide-eyed wonder child. I have a few quotes that are in my computer. I didn't copy them all out, that speak to this and why we love some of the poets we love. There's two I'm going to quote today. One of the things is, can we meet each moment as if it were our last, as speaking to the same thing, like, let's make the most of that moment. But I'll have many more moments. This one's not that special, you know. So John O'Donohue, I'm going to quote two of them, two of my favorite poets. John O'Donohue's Irish. Some of you, anyone know John O'Donohue? Yeah, some of you know. I recommend you check out his writings if you don't know him. He's died. He died 10, 12 years ago. And another is Hafiz, my other favorite, who's a mystic Persian, mystic poet, contemporary of Rumi's. So John O'Donohue says these few things. He'll say, I'd like to live like a river flows, carried by the surprise of its own unfolding. Wouldn't that be nice? Carried by the surprise. It's about that beginner's mind. And here's another one. Behind the facade of your life, there is something beautiful and eternal happening. He's just speaking to the depth of our spirits. And then he says, this is one of his blessings. May you learn to see yourself with the same delight, pride, and expectation with which the goddess sees you in every moment. And Hafez has a couple of things to say. I've read this one in this room before. It's just, he's funny. Hafez has got this quirky sense of humor. I couldn't lie anymore, so I started to call my dog God. First he looked confused, then he started smiling. Then he even danced. I kept at it, and now he doesn't even bite. I'm wondering if this might work on people. And then he has this one to say. Once a man came to me and spoke for hours about his great visions of God he felt he was having. He asked me for confirmation, saying, "Are these wondrous dreams true?" I replied, "How many goats have you got?" He looked surprised, and he said, "I'm speaking of sublime visions, and you're asking about goats?" I spoke again, saying, "Yes, brother, how many do you have?" "Well, Hafez, I have 62. "And how many wives?" Again he looked surprised, and he said, "4. And I said, "And how many rose bushes in your garden? How many children? Are your parents still alive? Do you feed the birds in winter?" And to all he answered. And then I said, "You asked me if I thought your visions were true, and I would say that they were if they make you become more human, more kind to every creature and plant that you know. Because the measure of the value of your vision of God is revealed in how you care for all the creatures and beings in your life." And there are two more that I just picked these out this morning. I was sitting at White Spot for an hour and a quarter because I had to get a very early ferry. So I thought, what else does Hafiz say? "It's not easy to stop thinking ill of others. Usually one must enter into a friendship with the person who has accomplished that great feat himself. Then something might start to rub off on you of that true elegance." Elegance has a capital E. Who doesn't think ill of others? You must know some people. I have a friend who pops into my mind. I've known her for years and years and years. And I don't know her so well. I don't spend hours with her. I visit her. But I was her midwife, and twice her daughters were born in my own house. So she spent, you know, weeks at a time there. So that kind of close. And she rarely, rarely speaks ill of others. And maybe she keeps it to herself, but on the whole, she just notices the good. She's one of the most extreme examples of that. I know others, of course, but she seems to be reliably elegant. And then also this is Hafiz. This is a line that I love in this one. "Just sit there right now. Don't do a thing. Rest. Because your separation from God is the hardest work in this world. Let me bring you trays of food and something that you like to drink. You can use my soft words as a cushion for your head. Because your separation from God is the hardest work in this world." All of this clutter and busyness, this separation from those moments when we're awestruck, such hard work. He's saying, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do so much. We can just be quiet. What we discover as we meditate more and we become more quiet is that there seem to be more and more beauty in this world. It's sort of puzzling. Wow, look how beautiful this. Look at that. People come on retreats into the teachers and they say things like, I've told you this many times. Some of you have heard this. One woman, I'll never forget her coming in the middle of winter. She lived in New York City. She came in the middle of winter in this retreat, 9-day retreat. So bright. And she said, there are 37 shades of green. She was so thrilled that she had finally seen green. The green was always there. All of it's always there. It's our seeing. Our seeing is so busy and cluttered up that we don't really see. When we start really seeing, we start really appreciating and valuing and being grateful. There's more and more gratitude, more and more attunement, more and more joy as a result of meditating. So how does meditation help this all to happen? It sounds lovely, doesn't it? And there's more I'll say tomorrow about this, but I'm going to get into what we can do about it. How do we do this? So here are good old meditation instructions. So We want those moments. Oh, I didn't say. I sort of take this for granted, but it's worth saying. In a moment when we are awestruck or attuned or any of those aha, aha, and the busyness quietens down for a moment and the sense of self falls away for a moment, we are in the present. We have only, right then, we're fully present with whatever it is. It's right here and where I am with it. The rest of the time, we're not fully present. We're partly present, and we're partly in the future, and partly in the past, and partly in some imaginary scenario, and what if, and we're not wholeheartedly present. So present awareness, I use the word awareness, when we can give our full attention to the present moment, we will have these moments more and more and more. We can live more and more like that. And when we're living more and more like that, then we are going to participate in a helpful way because we are full of reverence and care and interest and all those things. So of course we're going to be our best selves. That is the best we can be, is fully present, fully giving full attention. Then we behave as well as anyone can behave. It's doing the other, all the other stuff that's in the way that prevents us and inhibits us and reduces us to not being so good. So meditation, how to give your full attention to the present moment. Have you heard that before? And it doesn't matter what in the present moment you give your full attention to, because it's not about the object, it's about your state. So give your full attention to anything, something. Some things, several things, don't go too fast, because we also want to learn to slow that present attention down and stay with something a little longer. So it has to be something that you like, that's interesting to you. Nothing too boring, for sometimes the breath is way too boring and you don't have an aha moment with the breath, it's just a chore to stay with it. You'd rather be having aha moments with your fantasy world. So you have to be realistic about what to give your attention to that can bring up a sense of wonder or care for a few moments. And we want to grow those moments. That's one thing. Give your full attention ongoingly. And then another one is shh. Shh. Don't add any comment. Easier said than done. We all know. We go, oh, I like this. Oh, I want, what's wrong with my breath? Oh, my. Let it be just as it is, without comment. That's hugely difficult, and hugely liberating, and hugely simplifying. Suspend judgment, that kind of thing. You don't have to say anything. Don't add. Don't have to know or think about it. Our busy world and what clutters us up is the about. We're thinking about something, and stories about it, and descriptions of it, and details. We're not fully with it. As soon as we start thinking like that, we're actually disengaged somewhat. We're removed somewhat. Those moments with the moon, I'm not thinking about the moon. I'm quiet inside, and I'm just with it. It just is as it is, and I'm letting it be fully as it is. So you don't have to know anything. You don't have to describe it, explain it, tell anyone. So, shh. Fully there and shh. And then, a couple of other things. See if you can, and try not to be doing too much, but see if you can be embodied with that feeling. Because when you describe those words in the beginning, I asked you, they come from a knowing what it's like for you, which is, the knowing isn't thinking, it's actually experiencing. So people talked about light. Some of you used words which were more heady words, but there's a sense. You want to sense your experience, not think about it, not know it, but connect with it, experience. So we want to come down from the world of thought. Thinking about is what's in the way of directly being with. That's why I say shh. But if you can connect somehow with your body, and sometimes We just need to practice. Some people it's easier. Some people are more embodied than other people. Some people are more heady. Or if you're worried, you're going to be off in thoughts. Or if you're in a lot of pain, you might be in a lot of thoughts. See if you can be in your body. Come down from the thinking realms into your body where it's present and you can meet the moment. Thoughts. I'm going to be focusing on thoughts today. Not all thoughts are problematic. Not all thoughts are clutter. But clutter is thoughts. There are some thoughts that aren't so cluttery thoughts, but there are a lot of our thoughts are the clutter, are what's in the way, filling up the space. So when you have a lot of thinking going on, here's a little joke thing that Joseph Goldstein said many years ago, I've quoted many times. He's mostly talking about people in retreat, and they're trying to just be with their breath or be with their present moment, but they're thinking, thinking, thinking. He says, if you feel overrun by thoughts, pretend they're coming from the guy behind you. Because we believe in our thoughts, and we think they're the real commentary of what's going on, and they're actually just a bunch of babble. Most of the time, cluttery. So you don't have to believe them. Ah. These are my two bumper stickers that have never been on a bumper. They've been on my fridge. Can you see it? Don't believe everything you think. Don't believe most of it, actually. And then this one I got more recently. I really like this one. This is clever because it's got a sort of punny thing. Meditation is not what you think. Meditation is being present with. Not that thinking is an enemy and we're trying to suppress thinking, because we can't. It's useful, it's necessary, it helps us survive, and we have to plan and shop and, you know, all of that, function. It's fine, it's great. But we have completely fallen in love with thinking, and we've given that, we've made that sort of the top. That's really important. And the people who think the best and the cleverest with the highest IQs get the most money and the biggest cars and the biggest houses and the most reverence in our society. We really think that if we're clever, you know, have a lot of mental activity, that is actually a very distorted situation. And it's from a meditator's point of view, it's actually backwards. So we don't want to be lost in our thoughts. We want to be able to think our thoughts when we need them, to use them to get whatever the job is done or the plans made, and then let them go. We want mastery over our mind so we can think as we want, when we want, what we want, and then stop. But we, most of us don't have that mastery. The thoughts are running us. They are the master. And if they're worrisome thoughts or critical thoughts or you're not good enough thoughts, we completely believe them. And that's not liberation. That's the opposite. That's completely entangled in our thought world. So we need to learn to train our minds to think appropriately and to give up the thinking when it's not appropriate. So there's good thinking. There's wholesome meditative thinking. It's called contemplation or visualization or even reflection. You deliberately choose. Like, for instance, when I was doing that walking meditation and I said, let me feel directly into this feeling. And then thoughts that were useful came. But I wasn't lost in a bunch of story. It's a different kind of thinking. Or you visualize loving kindness. You were talking about, Sheila, about, you know, doing a retreat where you're deliberately thinking thoughts of well-being and sending wishes of kindness to yourself or somebody. This is wholesome thinking. It's using your mind deliberately. It's a brilliant thing. It's when it's doing it and you don't want it to be doing it. It's 4 o'clock in the morning and you're telling yourself that you're an idiot. That's where you don't want to be doing that, or you're worrying about something and you're trying to sleep and it's running you and it's running you ragged. We don't want that, obviously. Thoughts are really dangerous because if you believe them all, that this person is because of their skin or their history or their ethnicity or whatever it is, their social status, they are a good or bad person. They are worthy or unworthy of care and respect. Those are dangerous, downright dreadful thoughts. We don't want to think those kinds of thoughts. We will think them. The mind is going to keep. The mind has no shame. The thoughts, you'll think unbelievable things. But the point isn't what you think. It's whether you believe them or not. You'll think them. It's embarrassing what the mind will think. But you can just let them be just thoughts coming through, going by, going by, going by. And then the ones you want to think, you can continue thinking. And the ones you don't, you can go like, that's a lot of rubbish. when we have mastery. So the meditation training allows us to not be at the mercy of that thinking, but to be in charge of it, and to turn it off or redirect it, to switch it to another when we want to. So we have to do that, because, you know, the people who cause the most distress, and when you cause the most distress, either to yourself or others, is when you aren't able to do that. So a useful two last things, and these are what we're going to practice today, is if you have a lot of thinking going on and you have a whole kind of like cascade of it, it's hard not to get caught in that when it's powerful. It's usually powerful because it has emotion attached to it. It's not just a lot of words. It's because it is either you're afraid or you're worried or you're hurt or something like that. There's some emotion that's along with it, fueling it all. I don't know which comes first, the emotion or the thought. Sometimes a thought will make you feel something, and then you feel that, so you think more, and sometimes you have a feeling, something hits you, and you have a feeling, and then all this thought takes off like that. If that happens and you're caught in a storm of thinking like that, then the skillful thing is to, whenever you can do this, and you're not too caught in it, if you're thoroughly caught, you can't, there's no choice. But as soon as you have enough space again, doing some meditation hopefully, what kind of thinking is it? Worrying? Judging, complaining, hating, you know, what is it? So if you can name it as a kind of thinking, then you go, oh, right, you're in this kind of state, you're in a worrying state, oh, I'm worried, that's what's going on. So now you're back from the detail, you're back from being in it and believing in it, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm worrying, that's why I'm thinking all these kinds of thoughts, I'm hurting, you know, I'm scared, right. Ah, so that is really, name the kind of thinking, if there's a lot of it, that's one thing. And the other thing you can do from time to time, very skillful, is actually question your thoughts. It's kind of like, what am I thinking? What am I actually believing when I think these thoughts? Like, question your thoughts. A good question is, what am I believing? I'm going around saying, you know, my neighbor is just such a pain in the neck. What am I believing? That my neighbor is like wrong? So suddenly you're realizing your thoughts, there's like, you don't have to make it you. It's not you. It's just an activity going on in your mind. What is that activity going on in your mind? Question it. When we don't question it, we just are it. My neighbor is a problem, or I am not good enough, or it's a fact, and that's our reality. But if we question it, what is that? Is that true? Who's heard of Byron Katie? So Byron Katie she's a woman with a lot of wisdom, had some big insights and openings at some point, and she has transformed her teachings into what she calls the work. And one of the things she has people do is say something that's whatever a reality for them, a particularly difficulty for them, and say, is that true? Is that absolutely true? And then everyone says, oh, actually it's just a thought. By questioning it, instead of saying the statement as though it is the truth, it's like, question that, is that true? So those are a couple of ways of like, just checking that, is that right? The part that is asking is wiser than the part that's in the story. And we have all got plenty of wisdom lurking in the background. But it's lurking and it's shy, as I've been saying in the last few years. Our wisdom part, our caring potential, that's there when we're quiet, when we have those moments with the moon or with the sunset or with your lover or whatever it is, when everything's gone quiet, we are very, very wise. Our big knowing is there. But it gets pushed to the background when all the little da-da-da-da-da-da starts up. The part that is saying, what's going on here? How am I feeling? Is that true? Or the one that goes, shh. All of those is that's our fullness, our wisdom, our big selves, our beauty. Okay, so in meditating, we're going to give our attention fully to this moment's experience. Find something or things right here that we're doing, preferably in your body. Simple, but interesting that you can really be interested in and explore into. Hands, sensations in the hands, breathing sensations in the body, movements in the body moving as you're walking. Be interested in it. Stay there fully in the present moment. See if you can give your attention fully. And then, shh, don't add. Quiet. When you have a bunch of thinking, see what kind of thinking it is. See if you can feel what the emotion is there. Let yourself experience that. And every once in a while, question. Okay, those are the four things. So we're going to practice those today. Are there any questions? I'll say them one, oh, absolutely. Fully, give full attention to whatever experience you're having, something, or some things. Fully present, emphasizing the full. Stay with that a little longer if possible. Shh. Don't add anything. The fuller you can be with something, the less you're adding comments. If you are beset by a bunch of thinking, I should say when, what kind of thinking is that? What state is producing these thinkings? Is it worry? Fear? Hurt? Anger? Something? And let yourself let that be. But that takes you a step out of being caught in it. And every once in a while, question. Is this true? Okay? And that's the focus for today.